I'm Michael Slack. December 3rd is recognized annually by the United Nations as International Day of Disabled Persons. This observance of the International Day of Disabled Persons aims to promote an understanding of disability issues and mobilize support for the dignity, rights, and well-being of persons with disabilities. This international recognition by the United Nations also calls on countries to increase awareness of gains to be derived from including people with disabilities in modern society. The theme this year is Decent Work for Persons with Disabilities. Earlier this year, 82 member states and the European Community signed a landmark treaty protecting the rights of people with disabilities around the world. Based on the UN's own statistics, there's still much more work to be done. Consider these numbers. Over 650 million people around the world live with disabilities. Add to that their extended families, and a staggering 2 billion people live with disabilities on a daily basis. People with disabilities make up the world's largest and most disadvantaged minority. An estimated 20% of the world's poorest people are those with disabilities. And 98% of children with disabilities in developing countries do not attend school. What can be done to improve the quality of life for people with disabilities around the world? What is the United Nations doing about it? What can Canada do on an international level? To discuss these and other questions is Thomas Schindelmeier, Social Affairs Officer for the Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities Division for Social Policy and Development at the United Nations. We reach Mr. Schindelmeier on the phone from his office in New York. Mr. Schindelmeier, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
The theme for this year's observance is Decent Work for Persons with Disabilities. Could you expand on the message behind the theme?
Well, let me first start off by what we mean by the International Day of Disabled Persons. It is an opportunity to reflect on the number of issues that affect persons with disabilities throughout the world. And each year previously, we have chosen vague general themes, try to understand the message. But from now on, we'll be taking parts of the new Human Rights Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and try to show how we can operationalize, how we can actually put into practice some of the notions behind the ideas of this new Human Rights Convention. So last year we did e-accessibility, which proved to be very successful in generating a great deal of interest amongst website developers and the general public. The persons with disabilities cannot access their websites. And this year we've taken the approach of decent work. Now, decent work can mean a number of things to a lot of people, but it does fundamentally mean that you have the right and the ability to work in a setting of your choosing, in that's humane and not degrading. And as we know, persons with disabilities are amongst the most marginalized in every society. And this comes in many forms, including an inability to find work. Now, there might be a number of reasons why persons with disabilities may not be able to find work, but one of the key issues, if perhaps not the main issue, is the fact that there's so much negative stereotypes and, I would go to add, prejudices against persons with disabilities.
It really is a perception issue.
Absolutely, it's very much a perception issue. And this is one of the things we wanted to highlight this year around, is to show that where persons with disabilities have been given those opportunities to make a contribution in the workforce, I mean, they've reached astounding things. I mean, they're just as productive, as loyal, as trustworthy as everybody else in the workforce. And yet it just surprises me that we find this in so many countries that we've done undertaken research. It's not just, Canada's or United States or United Kingdom's. It's also countries like South Africa and Singapore and Korea and Japan and India. All these countries where we repeatedly see the same thing, give persons with disabilities the opportunities and they will do amazing things. And this is our message for this particular year, that giving persons with disabilities the opportunities is not only good for society, it's not only good for persons with disabilities, it's also very good for the workforce and for businesses.
And that's important to emphasize. It's good for economies.
Absolutely.
To have people who are working. They're now no longer marginalized. They're working, they're productive members, and now they're contributing members to society in terms of economic means.
Definitely, definitely. And if you look at companies who've gone down this route, and we'll be having several of them here in New York, they say it makes great sense as far as the bottom line is concerned as well. So it's a win-win situation all around, and a win-win situation which I don't understand why it's not seen more often.
Now, what nations come to mind in terms of providing decent work for persons with disabilities and setting an example of leadership?
Well, these are things are always tricky questions, trying to make international comparisons, because there's so many ways of looking at it. I mean, clearly those countries that do have some form of anti-discrimination legislation are certainly persons with disabilities are better off in those countries. And it's regrettable that only two-thirds of countries in the world have anti-discrimination legislation. That's a lot of countries. So clearly you're better off as a person with a disability in those places where you cannot be discriminated against legally. I mean, sure, it happens often enough, and you and I and everybody else has probably experienced that. But if you don't even have a legal framework and people cannot pay you what you earn or just simply say you're disabled, I'm not going to employ you, that's very frustrating, not to say demeaning and demoralizing.
So is that one of the first things that must be in place, is that legislation to make it discriminatory?
I think, you know, in many of these issues that we deal with in the field of disability, not having a necessary legal framework is one of the greatest disadvantages, because you know it may not change overnight, but at least you have a ground where you have a piece of a framework or legislation that you can work with to improve the situation. In so many parts of the world, that framework doesn't exist at all. And what do you do in those situations? I mean, I can recall many times living in countries where such legislation didn't exist, and my sheer and utter frustration at not being able to have any legal recall at all against what I thought were sheer discriminatory practices.
Have you seen any improvements, though, in those countries that you think about?
Absolutely. I do see it, because people then go and fight and demand for their rights, which they should do. And people also see that there's a mindset change, because people have to do it now.
Right. What programs does the UN provide to increase and encourage the hiring of people with disabilities?
Well, we're certainly trying to make a lot of awareness about the issue, and we are undergoing our own processes at the moment to make sure that we also become at least a good world's practice in this area. And so we're undertaking a number of initiatives to improve our record in this area.
And now, the fact that 82 nations, I guess, signed the treaty clearly shows recognition of a problem.
That's right.
What are some of the challenges the UN has faced when dealing with developing countries that have weak governments or tenuous democracies when it comes to the rights of people with disabilities?
Well, as you know, in those societies, everybody is at a disadvantage, and it's not just persons with disabilities. And clearly we have a huge road ahead of us. And implementing a convention in itself will be a big task. Implementing in those countries that have less respect for democracy and where the government may or may not be stable will be a big challenge. And we're certainly coming up with plans at the moment how to work in those countries. But it will be a big undertaking for us. Because I said it's not just persons with disabilities that are at a disadvantage in virtually most of society.
Right. So it's hard to just sort of treat one group without treating all of them.
Absolutely, because the poverty rates are exceedingly high in those countries. And it won't just be persons with disabilities who are affected by an unstable government. It's probably that persons with disabilities are disproportionately affected. You know, in cases of emergencies or humanitarian situations, it's proven, such as in the Thai tsunami or the Southeast Asian tsunami or indeed Hurricane Katrina, that persons with disabilities usually are not the first to be evacuated or helped out of such situations.
No, exactly. They're seen as marginalized as well.
That's right.
Part of the convention indicates that it will help change the perception.
That's right.
And this is important. We touched on this earlier, the whole perception that maybe those who are disabled cannot be as good as able-bodied workers, if you will, or just the fact that they're viewed as being outside of society. How does the UN promote change in perception?
Well, this is going to be our major effort over the next few years while we start implementing the convention. As you know, the convention has not entered into force yet.
No.
We have 118 signatories and 7 ratifications to date, and we need 20 in total. So at the moment, we're working on our various plans and what to do to make sure that when the convention enters into force, that we're ready for it. And one of it is clearly this issue of awareness raising that you talk about. For my money, most of the issues that arise when people talk about persons with disabilities are based purely on stereotypes and prejudices and negative attitudes. For example, it's often thought that, well, why should my disabled child go to school, for example? Now, there's no need for that. Children with disabilities shouldn't have an education. They shouldn't have the opportunities. If we could change that thinking around and say, well, persons with disabilities have the same human rights as everybody else, and they should enjoy the opportunities that I enjoy, then the whole question of, well, should they have an education? Should they be allowed to get employment? Should they be able to have a family? What are their entitlements to health? You wouldn't ask those questions anymore. They become redundant, because you can see that if you're a person like everybody else in society, then you should be able to have these things. Regrettably, that's not the case, though, at the moment. And that's definitely an area that we'll be working on to promote the capabilities and capacities and show people in society that persons with disabilities do have human rights and do make valuable contributions to society.
You're listening to special International Day of Disabled Persons programming on Voiceprint. I'm Michael Slack in conversation with Thomas Schindelmeyer of the Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities at the United Nations. Mr. Schindelmeyer, before the break, we were talking about changing perceptions and how the UN can affect that. How do you affect it at sort of like a grassroots level, if you do at a street level, for want of a better term?
Well, see, a lot of our work is done on a government-to-government basis. And through that, we will be certainly working with NGOs on that. But I suspect a lot of the change will come from NGOs and grassroots organizations themselves. The convention is a huge undertaking, and it's clearly more than any one entity can do by itself. And it came about by the disability movement. The convention is the international response to this long overlooked problem by the international community in terms of human rights. But we all realize that it's going to be a longer process to implement, and that we all have to pull together to make sure that we can do this and that we can change people's attitudes and change the way society looks.
And I think it's important, the example that the UN is setting. In reading about the organization, I see that it started off with the attitude that there was welfare for those who were disabled. And now the attitude has changed, and it changed a long time ago, to see in ways that it can help those with disabilities.
Absolutely.
So it's a case, I guess what you're saying is this convention will provide a framework, a guide, so that individual countries can look and see how they can apply it or what needs, where they're falling short.
Well, that's right. I mean, the convention countries who sign up to the convention and ratify it, they can't pick and choose what parts of the convention they like, what parts of the convention they don't like. I mean, they do have to implement the convention in its entirety. However, everybody realizes that a lot of these things will take considerable resources and considerable time. And so there is the whole provision of what they call progressive realization, that this will take time to implement, but countries cannot choose what they like and what they don't want to implement.
Mm-hmm. We'll just clarify that term of progressive realization. That is the idea that over time, because of the cost, it will have to be sort of amortized over time, and that would help defer the costs. The UN has said that an international help would be required.
That's right.
What form would that be? In aid and money?
We assume that will be forthcoming, absolutely. And we see a number of interested parties in helping in this particular area. So we're quite confident that there will be a great deal of international support, as well as hopefully local or national support, to the implementation of the convention.
How do you get those countries that have yet to sign?
Well, you know, I'm not that pessimistic that we only have 7 ratifications. I mean, the judicial process in many of these countries take a long time. And even with the best intentions and goodwill, it could still take several months, if not years, in some countries. Some countries, for example, on small islands, have an Attorney General's office of only a handful of people. I mean, they're completely overwhelmed. So even with their best intentions, they just can't do it as fast as some other countries. So to have seven at this stage is actually quite remarkable, and we're actually very pleased about that. And I have to also add that at the signature event, which is where government, at the signature event, I should say, earlier in the year, in March of this year, where governments have the opportunities to announce their intentions and their goodwill towards the convention, we had more signatories on that day for the convention and the optional protocol than for any other UN treaty in history. And most countries that sign will ratify at some stage.
Mm-hmm.
So 118 signatories, that's a lot of ratifications. So I'm quite convinced that the convention will enter into force early next year and that most countries will join.
And there is cause for optimism. As you say, that's a great figure, the fact that piece of information that it was the highest number of signatories, which shows the level of goodwill that
Absolutely.
People extend towards this.
I think it's a recognition that this is a convention that's long overdue. I mean, persons with disabilities should have the same human rights as everybody else in as far as all the other human rights instruments that are out there, but the reality is it's just not the case. And so this instrument now provides us with an opportunity to rectify that situation. And I have to add, the convention does not offer persons with disabilities any new human rights that they should have already enjoyed under the existing human rights instruments. What it does do is it spells out those human rights in more details to make sure that they do enjoy those human rights.
And it's important to understand the rights as they're indicated in this. This includes education, employment, the accessing of information,
mm-hmm.
healthcare,
mm-hmm.
Mobility, and this idea of fitting in,
mm-hmm.
the idea that they're not seen as exclusionary beings but part of society.
That's right, and at all involvement, that all decisions in the implementation of the convention should consult persons with disabilities.
Exactly, so they can be included as part of the decision-making process.
That's right, and not decisions made on their behalf anymore, which, as you know, has been so frequently the case.
Uh-huh. In general terms, how does Canada rank when it comes to inclusion for people with disabilities?
You know, this is a tricky question that we often get asked. I mean, how does my country compare to somebody else's country? And I have to confess that we don't really know in many ways. I mean, we haven't got any ranking systems. We have no international comparisons. But I'd certainly say that Canada, for its part during the convention, was incredibly helpful. It was very forthcoming with a number of suggestions, and in particular, the number of Canadian participants from the NGO communities that were here and who were very productive was really quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. So you see it on the people who represent it. I wonder if you could judge according to the legislation. It would be hard for you to know, as I say, for each individual country.
I have to confess, I'm not terribly familiar with the Canadian legislation and being able to make that comparison. But I'm suggesting, like most other countries in the world, that there's certainly room for improvement. And particularly in light of the convention, there may be room for improvement further.
Yeah, and there must always be that capacity for that. Although I'm not completely familiar with all the forms of legislation, if you look at what's happening here in Ontario with the legislation that was passed several years ago, which provides full accessibility, whether that's mobility issues or accessibility when it comes to the internet or accessibility when it comes to applying for a job. So, and these types of things that are very comparable to what the convention, the UN convention, talks about as basic rights for people.
That's right. But there's nothing to say that a country can't have a higher standard than what's in the convention. And the convention provides a minimal guideline for what should be there. And any country that wants to go over and above the convention is certainly entitled to do so.
You're listening to Special International Day of Disabled Persons programming on Voiceprint. I'm Michael Slack, in conversation with Thomas Schindelmeyer of the Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities at the United Nations. Mr. Schindelmeyer, before the break, we were talking about the fact that countries could exceed that. How do you deal with problems for a minority inside of a country without being seen as infringing on their sovereignty?
Well, that's a very good point. In most countries, governments request us to be involved. So we don't actually get involved in that stage. I mean, if you're asking about the monitoring of the convention, well, the monitoring per se will be done by our colleagues in Geneva at the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. And there is a built-in monitoring mechanism into the convention where countries that ratify have to report regularly to a body that will be created on their implementation of the convention and any other issues that may arise. There is also the possibility on the optional protocol, which some countries may ratify, where individuals can take their complaints once all national remedies have been exhausted to this particular body for scrutiny.
So basically, to allay sort of any fears, you really don't go anywhere you're not invited.
That's right.
Right. So these countries, as you say, invite you to help. So the countries that don't, you're hoping that one day they will.
That's right.
How else do we sort of change this perception when it's a cultural issue?
Yeah, cultural issues. I mean, I don't believe that none of these perceptions can't be broken. I believe it will probably take a long time, and we might be talking generations worth of time before there is a real significant cultural change in some places. But you have to think about what we're up against. We're up against thousands and thousands of years of prejudices and stereotypes. They don't go away easily. And we've seen significant changes in places such as in Western Europe and in North America, but they've taken a while, too, to implement, and we're still nowhere near a perfect society. So cultural changes, I think, aren't going to get in the way longer term, but they will cause significant problems to begin with, I'm sure, as we're trying to reset people's minds and think about looking at persons with disabilities differently than what has been the case in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of perhaps some creative solutions that you have seen, or perhaps individual examples where you've witnessed change?
Look, I'm always amazed when persons just make themselves visible in people's faces and show them that these stereotypes that others might be harboring are really not correct. I'm always impressed how that upfront, first-hand personal experience changes people's perceptions more than probably most other things that we could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. So it's the idea that that we really need to see it,
yes,
so that we can believe it.
That's right, because most people, I, from my personal point of view, are probably a lot more skeptical. But once they actually see it, that skepticism and some of that prejudice certainly disappears and fades away.
Exactly. And the other interesting thing, too, is when you start to look at bringing workers in, disabled people, into employment positions, that it doesn't cost a lot of employers to implement situations to help them.
No,
and other interesting things that building accessible features into buildings adds only about 1% or less than 1% to construction costs.
That's right. And, we did some analysis on reasonable accommodation, which is the legal term for trying to make sure that persons with disabilities can be accommodated in the workplace. And quite frankly, those costs are really insignificant. And I think I saw a study that it's around 75% of employers don't need to change anything, and that the mean cost is around $500. And we see pitiful amounts in a lot of other countries as well where they've done this particular type of work. So you're absolutely right in saying the costs involved in hiring a person with a disability are minimal. What's really preventing most people are attitudinal
mm-hmm.
issues.
So address those first, change the perception.
That's right.
And take these people who've seen themselves as exclusionary and make them included into a workforce that allows them to become employers and turn taxpayers and consumers.
That's right. But persons with disabilities are also made great entrepreneurs and great self-employees. So there's a range of opportunities out there. And if nothing else, persons with disabilities know how to cater for the disabled market.
Exactly, because they see the needs and they can meet those needs because they're needs that they have themselves.
That's right, and the disabled market ain't insignificant in many places. So that's also always a possibility. The fact is, persons with disabilities should be given the same opportunities as everybody else. And that's our main message for the 3rd of December. And when they do, well, then you'll be amazed.
Right. I've been speaking with Thomas Schindelmeyer, Social Affairs Officer for the Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities Division for Social Policy and Development at the United Nations. We were discussing the United Nations International Day of Disabled Persons. Mr. Schindelmeyer, thank you again for taking the time to speak with us on this important day.
Thank you very much indeed. Pleasure.
For VoicePrint, on behalf of producer Chris Warner and executive producer Paul Daniel, I'm Michael Slack. Thank you for listening.